Welcome to Lost River Legends. Our motto, Ex Tenebris, is Latin for out of the shadows. We attempt to understand the complex world around us and bring light to subjects hidden in darkness. We explore paranormal topics with guests from all around the world. Now welcome your Lost River Legends hosts, James and Brett. We hope you enjoy the show.
Author of Bigfoot Terror in the Woods Sightings and Encounters, and you're listening to Lost River Legends.
UFOs, ghosts, Bigfoot, and I believe it's all connected on some level.
I bought the joke that Sasquatch or Bigfoot, some variation of it has been seen on every continent except Antarctica. And then I always make the joke, there's probably one down there clubbing penguins.
They are then sort of either consciously or unconsciously looking for evidence that will help back that up.
He then clenched his fists, which were the size of basketballs, and showed me his teeth. It was then that I pulled the trigger, and he fell to the ground, holding his throat and screaming. The beast was back on its feet and screaming, with blood pouring down its chest.
Welcome everybody to your Friday and to the Lost River Legends podcast. My name is Brett. I am one of the co-hosts of the show. If you're a new listener to Lost River Legends, we want to welcome you to the Lost River Legends family, and we hope you enjoy the show. So Lost River Legends is almost on every podcasting platform, and we're also on YouTube. So do yourself a solid and subscribe to the channel so you don't miss out on any upcoming shows. After this episode, Lost River Legends will be taking our focus off of Bigfoot for a while, and we'll be delving into the world of UFOs and other unexplained aerial phenomena. And that reminds me, Her Highness Hillary Rodham Clinton, she sent in a special musical number exclusive to Lost River Legends. Take a listen.
And you know, there's a new name. It's Unexplained Aerial Phenomenon. Unexplained aerial phenomenon.
Phenomenon, 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 phenomenon.
Phenomenon. Phenomenon. Phenomenon. Phenomenon.
Wow. I mean, the pipes on that woman? No, but really, on another note, James and I, we're on the lookout for UFO sightings. So, if you've seen some strange lights in the sky, or you've seen an actual UFO, or, as Her Highness puts it,
unexplained aerial phenomenon,
then we'd like to hear about it. So, shoot us a quick email at lostriverlegends@gmail.com and share your story. We'd love to hear. And speaking of UFOs and strange lights in the sky, let's take a moment and step into the realm of the bizarre. The following audio clip was recorded a number of years ago when a very upset and an emotional man called into the Coast to Coast hotline and spoke with Art Bell. If you've not heard it before, it might frighten you. Take a quick listen.
Program made contact with. They are are not what they claim to be. They've infiltrated a lot of aspects of the military establishment, particularly the Area 51. The disasters that are coming, the military, I'm sorry, the government knows about them.
We're sorry, the number you have dialed is not in service at this time.
Yeah, that's a pretty scary call, and it sends chills up my spine every time I listen to it. Today, James and I finish up our two-part series with Bill Sheehan. Bill is the author of a series of books titled Bigfoot, Terror in the Woods, Sightings and Encounters. So we wrap up this part with some more Bigfoot stories and some conversations with Bill. And we'd just like to publicly thank Bill for being on the show. He has become somewhat of a big brother figure to both James and we respect him. And we just really enjoy talking with him and sharing these stories. If you want more information about his books, visit LostRiverLegends.com. Bill really leaves all the best and really the weirdest, scariest, most shocking stories in his books versus sharing them on podcasts like Lost River Legends. So visit our Lost River Legends website, navigate to the show notes under this episode, and you'll find links to his books there. And with that being said, let's get started with part two of our interview with Bill Sheehan. Enjoy the show.
But in this New Jersey encounter, these people lived in a very nice neighborhood. And they said that people for a couple of years were putting posters up on telephone poles of missing dogs. And it had gotten to the point where somebody even commented on a local news broadcast, like, you know, another dog was stolen from, you know, whatever, Smithsville, you know. They thought they had a dog thief working the area. And the reason being that this was a pretty well-to-do area, and most of the dogs that were taken were pedigree. So they were worth a couple of bucks. It wasn't like a mutt from the pound. And in spite of all of this dog thievery or missing dogs going on, this couple still had their heart set on getting a dog, and they bought this German Shepherd. So the husband had taken what I'll call a screw. I don't know if you've ever seen these. I've seen these used in the railroad for tie downs on poles. They're like large galvanized screws, maybe 4 feet long, 5 feet long, that you have to turn into the ground with like a pole through the eyelet.
Yeah,
they get wound down as like an anchor.
Right.
So he puts one of these screws into the backyard, hooks a piece of welded chain up to it with a brass snap on the end of it to hook on the dog's choke collar. Now, he told me that the deer in the woods used to taunt his dog. They knew that the dog was on a leash and that if he ran to the end, he went flying up in the air, choking himself, and that he couldn't get them. So they would come, you know, traipsing through the edge of the forest, looking at him. He'd bark and bark and bark and then, you know, to the end of the chain and choke himself. Well, that went on for a while, and then the dog, of course, would bark at other things, squirrels and whatnot. Well, one day, it was raining, and the husband had kept the chain up by the back door. His plan was just to put the dog out, let him run around in the rain, take care of his business, and then go to the back door and let him back in. He went upstairs, was working on his computer, and time went by, and he was like, holy smokes. And he yelled down to his wife, honey, did you let the dog in? She said, no, I thought you did. He comes downstairs, opens the door, no dog. And there's the chain laying out in the yard. It's raining. He goes out there. He's shouting for the dog. He walks over by the chain,
and the chain is snapped. And his first thought was, if it was a dog thief, all they'd have to do is open the snap. You know, you don't break, first of all, it's a welded chain. You don't just break that. And he looked down, and there was a large footprint with rainwater in it right near where the incident had occurred. And then he knew, he put two and two together, that this had to be what they call Bigfoot. Came over here and snatching the animals out of the yards in this neighborhood. And now it was his dog. So when you talk about the intelligence of these creatures, this creature couldn't figure out how to open a snap and get it off the dog. It went up to the chain and just like, ugh, boom, you're coming with me. Just like tore it off. And that was the end of it. So, I mean, you know, there you have a couple of things. You have creatures coming into residential areas. And to me, you have a sign of really a lack of intelligence in that it wasn't capable of looking or manipulating a snap or realizing what it was looking at, this mechanical device, and how to do something with it.
Yeah, and you've got just that tremendous feat of strength, though. I mean, you've got to think some of those chains are like tungsten carbide, and they're, you know, they're not easy to break, even if you're pulling, you know, two cars in opposite directions. So that's a lot of force.
Oh, it's ridiculous. I mean, you know, do you remember, like, we used to call it the swing set chain? Do you remember that old skinny link chain that used to come in like a home variety of a swing set?
Yep.
They were very narrow lengths, like kind of twisted around together and stuff. I would consider that a small or a weak chain, but it could support you swinging and never break. You could have that swing set for 20 years and never break. And there was no way, no way you were going to pull that chain apart by hand. So I'm sure this wasn't a freaking anchor chain this guy had on the dog, but he said it was a welded link. So irregardless of whatever type of chain it is, it's chain. Even the old sash weight chains and whatnot, the little brass ones, there's no way. You'll cut your hands, you'll pay your finger off trying to wrap it around it and pull it apart before you'd break one of those things. And they were only a quarter of an inch in diameter. So whatever this thing was had incredible strength to snap a chain clear and take the dog at the same time.
Yeah, and who knows, you know, it could have been, you know, something that took him a little bit of time to work at it, you know, could have been a 5-minute feat, could have been longer, could have been a 2-second snatch, you know, you just never know.
Yep. You know, that's pretty much where it goes with that. You know, these things are opportunistic. They seem to know what's going on in their area, be it seasonal or presented to them. I have a number of accounts with chicken coops, hen houses, pigs. A beekeeper had his hives busted into. I mean, they know what's going on in their area, just like any other creature snooping around knows. They know when it's harvest time. They know when they can get corn. They know when they can grab a pumpkin. They know when they can grab fruit on the tree. If they look at the tree and see something, they know it may be edible, and they go over. And this is going on. You know, I mean, animals, grubs, fish. They're definitely opportunistic, and they're survivors. They will eat whatever they can wherever it's made available. And if it just happens to be your cat, well, so long. You know, dinner.
Yeah,
dinner tonight is your pet.
That's disturbing to think about. But I'm sure it happens.
You know, I have large red-tailed hawks around here, great horned owls. My wife was in the yard one day. She heard a screech, like a shriek. The red tail had nailed a feral cat in my neighbor's yard. She said the red tail was on top of it and the cat was screaming and somehow managed to get away from its talons. And we think the cat actually died under our deck a short time later because we started to get a stink over there like a dead animal. I think it ran away and there's like a block foundation that my deck is built on. We think it hopped up in there like as a point of escape and actually died in there. But here's a hawk, good-sized bird, coming down to kill a cat. Another night, I was riding down the street, and I came up to a street light on a dark corner, an individual street light illuminating this one corner of grass next to some pine trees. As I turned my head, you know how when you see a singular light somewhere in the darkness, it presents like a cone of light coming down?
Yeah.
As I turned my head, I saw a giant pair of talons clutching a full-size fat cottontail, lifting it straight up into the darkness and out of this cone of light. So that was a horned owl. I mean, I've seen these suckers up close at around sunset. And some of these bad boys are like, you know, 2 foot tall or better. And they're, you know, maybe 10, 12 inches broad, like a little jug, you know. And, you know, if one of them can take a cat or, you know, a 5 or 6 pound rabbit, you know, just it doesn't take much for you to lose your pet if you leave him outside, you know. You think about a Bigfoot. Nothing, you know, there's just stomp the smack, you know, grab it and just crush it in their hand and it's all over, you know?
Yeah, a little nice bite-sized morsel for them. That kind of, you know, that story kind of reminds me of a story in book one, and it's a fisherman that has an encounter in Maine, I believe.
Oh, was that the man that was out trout fishing in his canoe? He was doing a lot of portaging?
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, and that was interesting because if you recall the story, he was doing, the canoe was really more of a tool to get him where he wanted to go. Once he was there, he wasn't canoeing much. He was kind of portaging over this shallow stream / river and stopping at pools where he saw the fish. So he was pretty much just chilling out. But his thing was that he had caught some trout and was laying them on a flat stone, as I recall, back on the side of this creek or river. And when he turned around, the fish were gone. And he thought it was raccoons. So he had packed a bowl on his pipe and moved up the stream, as I recall, and he's puffing on the pipe and doing a little fishing. And this time, I think he put a couple of 2 or 3 fish over in the stone, and while he was smoking a bowl, he was keeping his eye out of the side of his peripheral vision, you know, like really, he was smoking his pipe, but he was watching to see if the raccoons would come back out. Well, this time, he saw that long, hairy arm and hand extend out from the brush alongside of the river, reaching out like a foot off of the ground. And he said that the hand opened up and clutched the entire pile of fish in one grasp and retracted back into the bushes. And of course, when he saw that, he was just like, holy God. His tent was set up like, you know, whatever, 20, 30 feet away from where this arm had just extended. And even if he was going to get out of there and take his gear with him, he was going to have to go over there to break down the tent and get it in his canoe and then portage and paddle back out of here. So he was like going to be in harm's way. And he said that whatever this thing was had to have been laying on the ground because the angle that the arm and the hand came out, the only way that could have been done was if you were crawling on your belly, getting yourself into position, and then just extending your arm straight out like a broom handle, grabbing it and pulling it, retracting it back in. I mean, you want to talk about a freak show. Can you imagine?
You know, I couldn't imagine that. And just to see it not attached, what it was attached to. I mean, that would be that, you know, the sheer size of it and then not seeing what it's attached to. I think that would be the hardest.
Yeah. Now, look, if my recollection is correct, and I don't have, believe me, I don't have a photographic memory for everything I put to paper. But when I see the beginning first few sentences, they all kind of open up to me for the most part. But some of them, you know, as you're talking to me, they do come to me. I believe that guy had to leave under darkness.
Yeah.
I think it was late in the day and he wasn't going to hang around and decided to take his chances, portaging on the wet stones and paddling when he could in that stream with close brush on top of him, you know, on both sides, trying to get out of there in the dark. I mean, I guess his feelings were, you know, if I'm going to get my ass handed to me, it's not going to be because I'm not moving. You know, he just figured I'm going. And he did get out of there with no other indication of anything following him or doing anything to him. But just the whole idea of being alone with the boat and your gear and the darkness, knowing what you had seen while it was light. Oh, my God. I don't even know what I'd be, you know.
Yeah.
And again, here's a guy in the woods. Excuse me. Here's a guy in the woods. No firearm. Fishing pole, knife, whatever he had. And this is like his moment of reckoning. When something really bad could have happened. But it didn't. Somebody else might not have been so lucky. In his circumstance, the creature was just grabbing his fish, just like a raccoon would. So, you know, they're doing things very much like other animals. You have the dumpster diver going in the dumpster, just like the bears in Florida do, just like the bears in the parks up here do. You have people smelling food coming into the yard after it. You got animals snooping around for pets, just like birds do, raptors, cougars, you know. I mean, it's the same behavior throughout the animal kingdom. They will take advantage of whatever is available in their area. And I think as mankind encroaches further and further into their areas, these things are going to happen with greater frequency.
Yeah, totally. And that's something, you know, if they're also able to reproduce, it's like, well, how many in a Sasquatch family? And then, you know, do they end up having, you know, how much range do they have? And then how many more are there? I mean, these obviously aren't all the same, group, you know, the East Coast sightings and the Washington State sightings differ quite a bit. And there's quite a variety in sizes and shapes of faces. And some of the behaviors are way more aggressive. Some of them are, you know, cited as having sharp teeth. So, I mean, there's some diversity there to that.
You know, and one of the other things that I think is kind of said in ignorance, and again, some people are going to say I'm ignorant after they hear me tonight, but maybe they're not prolific at reproduction. I mean, I hear things about, like, the panda bears. They have to kind of, like, help them along in captivity to help them have an offspring. There's not exactly hundreds or thousands of these pandas running around in China. You know, it's not like, you know, opossums or whitetail rabbits or, you know, where they have these huge litters and many, many of them throughout their lifetime. We don't know anything about these creatures. What if they have one offspring in their lifetime? You know, what if they reproduce themselves once? You know, and then one dies and they bury it. I mean, you know, I don't know. I think the thinking about it is a little off, you know, and then there'll be people out there that'll say my thinking is a little off, you know what? But, yeah. You know,
but we're all able to form our own opinion. We're all able to draw our own conclusions, and those, I mean, I wouldn't say they're written in stone. I mean, there's new information all the time. You've got a different lens in that you've had so many of these stories stacked up, you know, and you can look at that as different data points and kind of line up a straight line through that and say, okay, here's the common thread that runs through this whole thing.
Well, listen, 2 weeks ago, I had a fellow contact me through my inquiry in my book cover. I put in there, if you've seen something, say something. And he called me. He contacted me via email. We exchanged phone numbers, and we had a conversation for a couple of hours. The guy's a hog hunter down in southern Texas, and I have a number of accounts about hog hunters. Once again, cementing the fact that these creatures will now take advantage of all of these freaking feral hogs and pigs. There are millions of these things running around the United States now, and they're really becoming a huge problem to the point where you have, like, posses of individuals. You have people being paid now by landowners to come in and hunt these things at will, shoot as many as you want, and do whatever you want with them. And this guy was on one of these ranches, a paid ranch. The guy takes you out. He gives you a blind. They tell you don't move until we come to get you. We're going to come pick you up at 10 a.m. They have a whole set of rules, a safety huddle. They bring you out. They put feeders out there. The hogs come in. You can bang one. He even had a bullet limit. They were only allowed to take 3 shells out with them into the blind. He went out there. The first day he went out with his son, I don't want to get the story messed up, but it really doesn't matter what the story is. On his second day out there, the kid didn't want to come out with him. He was tired or whatever, the son. He went out by himself. He gets dropped off in the same blind. He takes down a hog, shooting him through the blind, and I think the other hogs all scattered. And he put his foot up against the opening in his blind or his knee so the hogs couldn't run into the blind. And in the interim between shooting it and the hogs running, I mean, we're talking seconds. he looked back out, and the pig he had just shot was gone. Now, he had said that the pig was down. I mean, it was down. And he said most of the times, even if you take a pig down, other pigs will still stay around. Like, you know, they're like, yeah, okay, Joe's dead. Let's keep eating. But he went out. He looked. The pig was gone, but he didn't want to walk around a lot. I think he said because he wanted to come back later, and he didn't want to get the human scent around the area, something like that. He knew what he was talking about. I don't know what he was talking about. So they came to pick him up. And there was a couple other guys in the truck, and he told them what happened. So they formed like a perimeter search of the area looking for the hog. They didn't come up with the hog. There was a lot of blood where he had said he dropped it. So they figured this thing got killed like he said it did. They found some matted down grass, like bunches of some type of southern grass that grows like in clusters. He thought originally when he saw it, it looked like it might have been a place where a pig was laying down. But then he thought to himself, it looked more like something was stepping on there, like something was deliberately stepping on the grass to not leave tracks in the soil or something like that. And he did find some other bones laying around of taking some of these hogs. I bet you alligators are snapping them off the banks in Florida and Louisiana now, taking advantage of these fat little pigs coming over for a drink, and they know it, and they lie in wait in the water, and wham, they hit them and take them in. So the more you see this type of food source, I think the more activity will be seen around this food source. Because like I say, this isn't the first time somebody reported something unusual going on. Either an out-and-out Bigfoot sighting of them taking a hog, or in this case, this guy's hog disappearing and coming across some other peripheral evidence that he was connecting to a Bigfoot. I mean, you hear people out. I hear this guy out. He took the time to call me. And again, he wasn't somebody getting on the phone and telling me I saw a 14-foot tall Bigfoot riding in Santa's sleigh. He's telling me, I didn't even see a Bigfoot, but this is what happened. And I thought I'd touch base with you and tell you what my opinion was and what had happened. And I appreciate that. And here I am sharing it with you.
Yeah. I mean, you're sharing the love. We really appreciate that. I know you've got a bit of a time limit, and we don't want to keep you if you've got to get going. But if you have one more story, a short one, that'd be awesome. And you know, something that a lot of these have that whole physical trace evidence kind of thing to it. But you have some stories that kind of fit more into what some people would call the woo. And that first one kind of did. But there's one that I remember talking to you on the phone about. And it had to do with a black ink goo. And that just blows my mind. I don't know if you can share that one with us.
I have to tell you right now, I'm stumped. A story about black ink goo?
Yeah, something about there was like a swirl of a black cloud or mist. And...
oh, are you talking about the drain?
Yeah, that.
Yeah, no, yeah, I think you're imagining black ink goo.
Perhaps.
which threw me for a loop. Well, these two girls were out hiking, and they saw in the sky, it was a beautiful day, They saw in the sky what appeared to be like a swirling, blurry area with like distinct border. And so the one girl is like rubbing her eye and, you know, doing things like we all would do, like, you know, like thinking you got a floater in there or something, blurring your vision, something weird going on. And then the other girl realizes, like, I'm seeing it too. So they're watching this thing, this swirling, she described it as like swirling oil spinning around, going in on itself like water going down a drain. Now, they had no way of telling what the distance was, near or far. They had no boundary. They didn't know how big this was, how far away it was. They were just simply looking at it. Well, this bordered drain or swirl passes in front of what was now a measurable tree line that was in the distance from where they stood. So now they knew that basically these trees are X amount away from us and this thing is in front of them. And now they were estimating the dimensions of what this drain was. And I forget the figure they put on it, 10 feet in diameter, 20 feet in diameter. It really doesn't matter. They had a reference point now being this thing moving and moving lower and moving in front of a forested area where they could see it now. They could define that this is here and it's moving, and now it's in front of these trees. And as they're watching this, a dark figure emerges out of this drain or swirling oily whatever you want to call this thing. And as the figure emerges, it's a Bigfoot. And it comes out of this swirling portal or drain, as she called it, and goes walking away from them out into the field. Not looking at them, contacting them, maybe didn't even know they were there. And that was really the end of the story. But, you know, people talk about all these crazy things like portals and whatnot. Like, the host's name on Coast to Coast is slipping me now. George Knapp. I always use George's name when I talk about this incident because he was at that Skinwalker Ranch and has spent a lot of time talking about it and investigating it. And I think he knows some people over there, maybe even the people that own it. And I remember the first time I heard them. One of the first times I heard them talking or interviewing about the Skinwalker Ranch, they had this crazy tube. This tube, like, suspended off the ground, like a tunnel in the middle of nothing. And they saw this creature come through the tube, exit the tube, and run away.
Yeah,
and I don't know if you ever heard that, but I've actually heard him talk about that a number of times. And then when I heard this story, I was like, wow, that freaking sounds a lot like that. It wasn't a tube, but it was a swirling, like, what is this swirling circular thing? What is that? Moving around in space.
Yeah, and it lends credence to kind of that interdimensional aspect. And the question is, what dimension, you know? Where is that coming from? Like, what power or what technology, what is powering that? What is making that happen? And, you know, talking about, Skinwalker Ranch, you're correct. There's the new, Skinwalker Ranch documentary. It's Jeremy Corbell, and they do have some of that historic footage, from interviews from the NIDS team. And they're talking about that experience, that exact thing that you're talking about, and it does have that like correlation and that crossover. And there's several more from Pennsylvania. I'm trying to remember the guy's name. Is it Stan
Gordon?
Stan Gordon has multiple stories that he's shared that have a bit of an overlap with that. So I have to say there's something to it.
Yeah, well, whatever. I mean, you know, I have no axe to grind. I look at myself like a conduit. I'm like passing information. You know, it's like an electric cord, current flowing through it. I put this stuff out there. It's out there for your consideration, for mine. And I'm sure there's a lot of other people passing stuff around out there. I heard this. I saw this. My brother saw this. My mother saw that. Blah, blah, blah. And, of course, we all fall back to the same old shtick. To those who believe, no further evidence is necessary, and to those who don't, none will suffice. And I'll stick to my guns on that one, because when I read some of these critics, I say to myself, boy, these people need to get a life. You know, if they have so much time to comment negatively on what I'm saying or positively, you know, you need to get yourself a hobby.
Maybe they can start their own podcast, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is nothing personal, people. You know, I'm just a guy out there spreading some news. And, you know, you can take it or leave it, and it won't make a difference in my life whatsoever. So, I personally don't get it, you know, but I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued by the layers that have been put before us regarding this creature, you know. I had a guy on, and believe me, I got to go, guys. I'm not cutting you short. You know I'm on a time limit. I had a fellow I was talking to. I was actually interviewing with him not too long ago. Lives in Oregon. Has lived up there his whole life. And when I told him about this, the map on the wall, he says, you see that dense spot up there with all those lights in it? I live in the middle of that. So he's had a number of encounters. And I mean, this guy's got like freaking mountain lions coming into his property. You know, neighbors up on the sides of mountains. I mean, he's like really in it. And this guy could care less what you think about what he's seeing, where he lives, who he is. He's just like, hey, you know, forget about them. Let's just move on with what we do. And I take the same stance, you know. Average person commenting about you and I talking about this or anything else doesn't have a clue. They're just negative or whatever they are. And, nah, 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 these guys are kind of hot air. And, nah, 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 nah. You know, and we just have to keep going on, or keeping on putting the stuff out there and see where it goes. You know, who knows? Maybe the next time I'm talking to you guys, you'll be telling me about your sighting in Idaho.
Yeah, who knows? That's we're certainly hoping to get closer to that happening. I tell Brett all the time, I don't know if I'm ready for that. You know, I don't know what my reaction would be, but we appreciate being on this end of the conduit and you sharing that information with us. It's been a lot of fun. And we appreciate you coming on the show. You have a good night.
Yeah, thanks a lot. And just to the people out there, I think I told you earlier, I've been posting some readings on YouTube. I put a few up there because people were saying they'd like to hear something in audio. And I put six up there that you can listen to. Just type in Bigfoot Terranoid Sightings Encounters, and you'll see my book covers there. And the first are a little bland. I mean, I'm just kind of like, hey, Bill Sheehan here, and I read the story. And then I'm going to have some more coming out. I've been working on it a little bit, trying to get a little more creative in the process with some music and some creepy music and doing a little better job of it. But they're out there. And, of course, the books, www.buybigfootbooks.com, that link will take you wherever you want to go as far as, you know, if you're interested in getting any of the books, you know?
Yes. And could you share with us the YouTube channel name one more time, just to make sure everyone gets that?
Well, you know, I put my name in as Bill Sheehan, S-H-E-E-H-A-N. Because even though I use the name W.J. Sheehan on the book, almost everybody I talk to calls me Bill. So I said to my daughter, you know, Danny, they won't let you put the name of the book on there. It's too many characters. And I said, I don't think people are going to remember W.J. Sheehan, even though they will after they have a book in their hand, you know. So I put up Bill Sheehan. But if you type in Bigfoot Terror in the Woods, Sightings and Encounters, that's going to bring you right into my wheelhouse.
Great. We'll make sure that we link that up in the show notes. And we're definitely going to subscribe and follow you there because you're one of our faves. So thank you so much.
Yeah, that's awesome. And look forward to, you know, what I'm going to be putting up there down the road in another week or two or three. I'll be starting to put some newer stuff up there. This like revamped stuff that's kind of entertaining. I think it's kind of cool. So, hey, you know, we got to have a little fun with this too. Everything can't be just a freaking drag, you know?
Awesome. Yeah, it's true. I mean, it's definitely, I always say it's got that entertainment factor. It's kind of what keeps us hungry for it. You've definitely whet our appetite this evening, and for that, we can't thank you enough.
Yeah, and to me, it's creepy. I mean, this is definitely as creepy can be. You know, large creatures sneaking around in the underbrush, appearing randomly to people seemingly accidentally for the most part. I mean, that's frightening to me. I mean, I think if anybody tells you it's not frightening, they're lying.
Absolutely.
I mean, that is, it's equivalent to me of, let's just say, like a white shark attacking a surfer. We know they're there. I've been telling people, as long as I can remember, there are plenty of sharks in the water around Long Island, including whites. And they look at me like, yeah, we never see them. How come there's no... That's the same thing. How come nobody ever gets bit by them? You know, why haven't I seen one? You know, they're just ignorant. They're just freaking ignorant. And, but they're there. Hopefully nobody gets torn up by one, you know? But if enough people are out there and given the right set of circumstances, people do get hit by a shark. Some of them get killed. Some of them get maimed. We all know this. It's not happening continually, but it's happening, you know? And I think the Bigfoot phenomena is equally as creepy.
I agree. I definitely agree.
Well, anyways, guys, I want to thank you for having me. And we'll do this again sometime.
We'll definitely do that. And it's been an extravaganza.
And that's the way I gave it to you, right? I said, we're going to have an extravaganza tonight.
Exactly, exactly. And it has been. You've given us a lot to think about.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much. There's just so much information. So many people. Well, guys, thanks a lot for having me. And it's been a pleasure being with you.
The pleasure was all ours.
All right, thanks. I will be talking to you soon.
And that, folks, concludes the latest episode from Lost River Legends. For those who are new to the podcast, make sure to check out our other episodes and subscribe to make sure that you don't miss out on any future releases. And with that being said, we hope everyone is happy, everyone is safe, and until next time, take care.